music industry, a music producer seeking new techniques, or someone who simply wants to gain a deeper understanding of the music business, Music with a Twist is the perfect platform for you. Hello, and I'd like to welcome you to yet another episode of Music with a Twist. We will be interviewing Janisha Jones with us today. Now, Janisha, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what do you do in the music business?
Thank you, Lindira, for first of all having me on the show. Like you said, my name is Janisha Jones. I am a classically trained musician, singer, songwriter. Went to school to learn how to better promote myself as an artist and quickly realized I'd have a more sustainable career on the back end. So for the last 15 years, I've had the opportunity of working as an advocate for music creators, songwriters, and producers in the publishing sector. I've worked for companies large and small, from boutique publishing companies in New York City to major independent record labels and publishers, Cobalt Music Publishing, Empire Publishing, and primarily in copyright and royalty administration. However, I've also delved into the space of tech development and software development for rights management systems. I've become an expert in rights and royalties management. Last year, I released a book called Getting the Bag, Rights and Royalties Management in Today's Modern Music Economy, as a way to encourage more of the BIPOC community to take ownership of their creativity. And it became a number two bestseller on Amazon in their music business category. So that's something I'm really proud of. Outside of that, as a woman of color in the music publishing and music tech space, it can be pretty isolating. And I found a need for building a network of like-minded individuals, Black and Brown women, who are also executives in the music industry. I produce a podcast called Pub Royalty Queen Podcast, where I've interviewed now over 30 women of color about their challenges navigating a white male-dominated space. And I started to realize there were some similar themes throughout our stories, which I'm not sure if you want to get into that now or if we should talk about it later. But as a result of the podcast, I produced a research study called A Seat at the Table that's been world-renowned, a groundbreaking study about intersectionality in the music industry, one of the first of its kind. I also launched a nonprofit organization called Juke Joint Foundation to support women of color executives and those aspiring to be in the music business. And just to kind of bring it full circle, last year I launched So Saucy Records, which is an artist services platform specifically tailored to the needs of women of color artists and music industry executives. So Fresh and Sassy Productions is the holdings company that houses all of these subsidiaries that are an ecosystem of safe spaces for women of color.
So after hearing all of that from you, Janisha, I can give you a round of applause, you know.
Thank you.
Because as a woman of color, I totally respect and support everything, you know, that you're doing right now. And it's really commendable. And, you know, as women of color, as women, we usually don't clap and applaud for one another, but that was really commendable. And you go, girl, keep going. Keep going.
Well, now, I think it's important to have advocacy, not only just for ourselves and our individual advancement opportunities, but as a collective, because there are so few of us represented in this industry, and most industries are male dominated. That it doesn't make sense for us to not support one another. We don't have the luxury of being against each other. So I do receive what you said, and I'm here also to support you in what you're doing.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for that. And, you know, safe spaces are usually crucial for us. You know, it's where we foster all of our creativity, where we get our professional growth from, and our mental well-being. And that's something that's so big right now in the music industry, with a lot of persons, you know, whether it's male, female, or however you represent yourself, mental well-being is something that's really big right now
in the industry. But we want to take a moment right now and highlight the lack of representation and probably some challenges. Focus on some challenges that you might have had, in the industry so far. And
Man, there's been a
and
lot.
yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the challenges that I face currently as an entrepreneur is lack of ability to raise capital to invest in the technology that I'm developing. So Soul Salty Records, like I mentioned, is an artist services platform, but we're utilizing technology to introduce a new business model, one where artists are paired with vendors like artist services, consultants, executives, labels, etc., based on their budget and service requirements. And that technology, while it's not super expensive to develop, I don't have a coding background. I'm more of like a technical product manager where I conceptualize, design, manage the development and roll out the products. So I utilize engineering staff, and that's something that requires capital. So I recently have had some struggles with people who are interested in being a part of the project because they see the value in it and the ability for it to transform the music industry. But unfortunately, I'm not seeing a whole lot of investment of monetary investment into the development, and that's something that's been a bit of a struggle. Moreover, I think a lot of times people will take advantage of Black and Brown people because they realize their lack of resources puts them at a disadvantage, and they often try to leverage their own connections or access to capital or other resources to submerge the or dilute, I should say, the equity that the owner might have. And so that's something that I've experienced recently is being able to managing my relationships, getting access to people who have capital, but who aren't really willing to negotiate fair terms so that I can maintain ownership, majority equity in the company. So that's something that I would say is a huge challenge right now. In the past, as a Black woman, just some of the main stereotypes that we receive in most industries. Whenever you're an assertive person, or you know what you want for yourself, or you're highly specialized, or have intelligence about something that others may not have, that poses a threat to folks that don't look like you and don't want to necessarily see you succeed in that space. And so you can face retaliation, you can face, microaggressions in the workplace. You can face being pit against other Black and Brown women because of the lack of representation, and that can create a bit of a toxic working environment for you. So I've experienced that in a number of places that I've worked. I used to think that I would say even my father, who's someone who's like always been super supportive of me and my endeavors. I remember explaining to him how I felt this kind of distress in the workplace because I was doing exemplary work, but I was being undermined and discredited and having to face allegations of, the angry Black woman trope, which is crazy. And then my dad, coming from a good place, he says, just do the work. Just do the work, and that speaks for itself. But unfortunately, that's not the case all the time. I feel that Black and Brown women, we're constantly having to overachieve and overextend ourselves in the workplace to demonstrate our value, where our constituents don't necessarily have to go into that space with that. Because just by us being in the room, we take up space. And we're having to prove ourselves, and I think that's an unfair expectation. And so anyway, with that being said, there's a lot of work that needs to be done, but I think for us, it's important to, when we enter into these rooms and we enter into these spaces, to open those doors and keep them open for other people that look like us specifically, and to be deliberate about that and not catty about it or make it so. There's like this generational situation too sometimes that happens where, the older crowd, the boomers or Gen X, they are wanting us to work 10 times harder than they did just because they had to fight for what they got. And it's like, that's not how anybody, gains any kind of forward movement, collectively. You have to make it easier for the next group of people. And that's
Exactly,
something
yes.
that crabs in a barrel mentality, unfortunately, is something that's so ingrained in us. We have to learn how to have an abundance mentality and realize that what's for us is for us, and that we can do better together rather than separately.
Apart. I found it, so strange that you touched on that topic, and ended on generation, because as you started to speak, my mind went on a conference that I actually attended a few weeks ago, and it was almost as if Mother Africa is calling her children home. And why I made that assimilation or I put that together was, it was an African bank or an African business association coming into our region. And the Bahamas is actually not the first place or the second place that they have come to visit. They actually went to the US as well. And we know Africa to have so many resources, gold, they have oil, they have diamonds. You can basically find everything that's a raw material that is used in our places in Africa. And seeing that they're so poor, they're like, we have everything that the world needs. We have everything that the world uses. And why are we so poor? It's mainly because, not really knowing what we have and selling what we have for little to nothing. And then everyone else around us taking our resources and making so much from it. So there was this company in specific. They create the shea butter. And we all use shea butter in all of our products. I actually have some in my hair right now, and it's something that women of color, Black people use a lot of. And they sell this shea butter as a raw material. And watching other companies make millions and trillions off of something that's a raw material for them, and they're not even being able to make that same amount. They're like, what is going on? What is going on? And that's where I get the whole thing from. Mother Africa was actually calling for her children because they took the conference and they went into different regions, talking to different African Americans and women of color, especially who were successful, and asking them, what did you do and how can you bring back and contribute? Because we notice now that this is a generational thing for us. It's something that existed not so much from when we were all dispersed in different regions into the world, but this originated from Africa, when we were all on the same continent and we were traded by our own, because I think I heard you said that, with the Black Crab syndrome, and we were passed off from the kings and queens that wanted to trade. They had everything that they needed, but they felt like they had to take or own what the others, the Europeans, might have had, and they didn't have that appreciation for what they have, And I see, as women of color, actually listening to what you've said, it's mainly just not really realizing what we have, an under appreciation. That may be at the bottom of why we're so underrepresented. And seeing the whole accomplishment of Black people and what we have accomplished, down to the washing machine, the traffic lights, we assisted in the
The
auto
inventors
field,
of the world.
the inventors of the world. And going back to our topic with the challenges of women of color, assessing funds. You know, I can also relate to that with having issues, but
There's a
basically,
level of accountability that has to happen, though, as a leader. And I think, unfortunately, when you're a Black woman and you hold some type of authority, people feel uncomfortable with you telling them what needs to be done or what your expectations are and how you expect for them to rectify the situation if they should be held accountable. So and I think unfortunately we also have to take some responsibility because we don't set the bar early.
No,
I
we
think
don't.
we have the tendency to be very forgiving and very flexible. And where I know a lot of men, and particularly who would just say, "This is what I expected, and I didn't get it, and so you're gone," or they really nail down the hammer, so to speak, when it comes to that. So I think we in our own way need to learn how to set our standards early in the process, and so that we are not again, just taken advantage of. And I'm sorry that happened to you.
What I've realized and I've been researching on, you know, in my personal affairs with the conference and music consultation, I've been making contracts and drafting contracts more. I've been networking with a lot of lawyers and making sure that I have all of my legal foundation solidified, you know. So if that happens or if anything happens in that case, you know, there's always that grounding. And I can say that, you know, I will not be taken advantage of as a Black woman. I will not be taken advantage of as a woman, you know, because we know that it's so prevalent on the in the workforce. And especially, you know, when you present yourself to be a manager, it's the psychological map of it is like insane, you know, because you always have to stand your ground and you're being called bossy. Women are not supposed to be that loud, you know, you're supposed to sit in the corner and just listen and take instructions. And I'm like, well, I can help you shift this. I can see the problem, you know, and dealing with it, you know, even as we're going to touch on mental health a little bit and how it has impacted you. Things like that take your health out of whack. Things like that take your mind out of whack because it's like, I know what I am made for. You
Yeah, and I
know, I
mean,
know what I can do, you know.
the whole imposter syndrome is so prevalent in, with our community because while we see our peers have mentors and are being offered constructive feedback or opportunities to advance or, given the resources to move forward in their projects or their endeavors, we find ourselves only getting that feedback from ourselves and from each other. And so what my research studies showed, a seat at the table showed, was that I think it was about 70% of women of color receive feedback from their hiring managers once a year or never. So think about that, right? Like we have to do all the work, present all the work. We only hear from our supervisors once a year what their thoughts were on that. Where, even just locker room talk or being invited to opportunities to collaborate or build camaraderie with hi hiring managers. By some of the nepotism that happens in some of it, all of the nepotism that happens in the music industry are results of people n having family or friends that are already in those senior leadership positions. So they have already relationships cultivated. That's an advantage. If you don't have that, then you're putting that at a disadvantage. And so without having, that consistent feedback, without having a mentor or someone that's going to show you the ropes or give you some grace, and say you belong here, we often feel like, well, do I belong here? And I did want to touch on the Mama Africa calling us back, because
Yeah, go ahead.
that was a turning point for me. 2 years ago now, my family and I, we took a trip to Egypt,
Oh, that's
and
nice.
we did a cruise on the Nile from Luxor to Aswan and back, and then we did Cairo as well.
Did you,
And
sorry to stop you right there, but do you know that I actually named my son Cairo? I fell in love with that
really,
name. Yes.
I'm not, I'm not mad at that. I think that's a beautiful name, but a very powerful name, because there's so much history there, and the energy in Egypt in general just is transformative. When I came back, because I think also as an African American woman, even though my ancestors helped build this country, we're not taught that we actually belong here. We don't feel like we belong. We're meant to feel like we don't belong here. And so going to Africa, I actually felt like I belonged somewhere, finally. And with that grounding and that foundation, realizing the power that the Egyptians had. I've been to a lot of ancient sites in my life. I've been very lucky and blessed to have been able to travel the world. Nothing came close to what I experienced there. To be able to marvel at these 3,000-year-old statues and be like, how did they do that? And how is it still so preserved? Like, everything was so intentional. And when you think of the technology that was developed in Egypt, most of the things that we have the luxury of having today, were constructed in Egypt first, and then Rome, as we know, they take these ideas and they exploit these ideas, and then they, become what we know universally. However, to realize that, Black and brown people were the original innovators of the world, I came back with a newfound sense of self. And I actually went to my boss at the time and I told him, hey, I vowed that I'm never going to play small again. But in order for us to continue to push that envelope forward, the bar for us has to continue to be raised. And it's unfair, but also just think it speaks to like who we are. Like, we're just the shit, and people hate that about us, but they also love it. They love to hate us. I think that's really, like, they love to hate us. And I think there's just a level of Black excellence across the di diaspora. There's so many different cultures within, Black and brown communities. We're not all monoliths. What they're seeing now, especially in the music industry, is they're going into now the Wana regions, West Africa, Northeastern, Japan, Latin America. They're going into these spaces because they're seeing there's talent there and there's money to be made there. But now it's our time to really like sit with what we know best, which is culture, and own it. That's why I wrote my book, because I was like, I'm starting to see now the tentacles of these profiteers going into these regions of the world they didn't technically have access to before, and they're wanting to exploit talent there. So I'm saying, instead of giving your stuff away, instead of letting people breadcrumb you, and instead of people try to sell you the world and then underserve you as a community, own your stuff, make your own money, and distribute it within your community. We need to build our own systems. We need to build our own empires. We need to build our own things and stop kowtowing to, the powers that be. Because the truth of the matter is, like I said, they know what we're capable of doing. And but as long as we, undermine our own creativity and our own power by going into their systems, they're going to continue to exploit us. So That's my 5 cents of
Yeah, that
the matter.
was more like 10 cents, but I love it. And it's so important, you know, to develop and create spaces like this where we can network and support one another through experiences, you know, and collaborating. And I like how you touched on establishing mentorship opportunities, you know, even if it's through creating podcasts like this or platforms where we can actually divulge and create those interconnecting opportunities with one another. Yeah, because, you know, it's a lot of emotional support. Yeah, and with that, you know, offering career advice for one another and assisting one another.
An unfortunate reality for a lot of us is that we feel invisible. You know, that's the education, is it? How do you navigate a world where you're, and this is the funny thing, like we're not a minority, but even people like to say that we're minorities. Like really,
Yeah, right.
people of color are not the minority in the world, but but that's kind of the construct that we've been forced to buy into, is that because we don't have the power, we're the minority. But that's not true. Anyway, to just go back to the invisibility, I always felt like in order to be visible to people, I had to be an overachiever. So that goes back to what we were saying earlier, was like I would see how mediocre, and even in the corporate world, there were situations where I would come in, you know, in a manager role, and I would be paid significantly less. And it's like, and then that person would rely on me a lot to help them. So it's like, okay, so, you know, where's the fairness in that? Now, I will also say I've empowered myself, because I am the type of person who asks for forgiveness later. You know, I feel like the minute we go into a room and we start asking, can I do this? Can I do that? What do you guys think about this? You give them the opportunity to say no. And they will
Love
say
that.
no. And they will say no. At least that's been my experience. So instead of going into the room and asking for direction or permission to do things, I just did it. And if it fell flat, or it did something, you know, it never was catastrophic. It was always like a strategic decision. But if it was something that it was a mistake, I take accountability for it. But most of the time, it's always come back to me as, oh, now somebody else wants to take credit for it because it was so great. You understand? Like,
Yes.
that was a great idea, Janisha. Congratulations. You didn't ask for permission to do this, so now I'm gonna take ownership of this. And it's like,
Exactly.
so, and that's why I started my own businesses, because I realized if I can do this for other people, if I can help someone else build their dream, why not do it for myself? Why not invest that time and that energy into building myself and the things that I want to get done in the world? Granted, most of the work that fills my soul is advocacy work, so it helps other people, even when it affects and helps me as well. So essentially, you know, the podcast, I started the podcast, had never done a podcast before, you know, didn't even have a great setup or anything like that. But I am a systems person, and so I had a system that worked well for me. And when I started to do the interviews, I realized this is helping me build my community. This is helping me build my network, because I didn't have one. And I felt alone. And I felt, you know, like I'm out here being gaslit, you know, about what I know I'm contributing in the corporate space, but it not being validated. And I was like, am I tripping? Is it just me? Or are other
You're
people
not.
feeling like that? You know, so I started the podcast and I realized, no, it's not just me. Everybody was feeling that way in some form or another. And so now, as a data analyst, I said, okay, well, I'm a business strategist. I know that these corporations, they don't move without numbers to legitimize, their strategies or their investments. So we're in this space where people are like, we want to invest in DEI initiatives, and we want to make things more inclusive, and we want to hire, more Black and Brown people, but we don't have the data to support it. Okay, this is now data. This is data representative of women of color specifically. And I did it like that because there were questions that I wanted to ask that I know the average person could not even be have the sensitivity enough to ask, not know how to ask the questions that really get down to the nature of how women of color are treated. In the study, we talk about just the barrier to entry into the music industry. Everyone knows the music industry is hyper competitive. It's always been that way. However, there's a lot of nepotism in the music industry, and so there are people who have access to working in the business by way of their friends or their families who have their own structures or their own companies. And so, as someone who was classically trained, went to school, I took out student loan debt in order to finance my education, like the rest of, Black and Brown women who go to school. M The majority of us acquire at least a bachelor or higher degree of education. And then we take out student loan debt because we can't afford to go to school with the limited resources that we have. But then that student loan debt is now being met by unpaid internships, which the majority of us who enter into the music industry have to undergo in order to gain access to it. Now, when you think about where these major music markets are, they're in major metropolitan areas, which are not in on a, they're not inexpensive places to live. So how are you going to be on an unpaid internship, needing to pay back student loan debt, and yet live in a major metropolitan area? You have to have some type of support to do that. You have to. There's also this notion, DEI, initiatives, ERGs. They like to say, well, we're going to create a college to industry pipeline by funding HBCU programs, getting HBCU students introduced to the music industry, and then funneling them into internships. And I'm like, one, the majority of women of color that attended college did not attend H HBCUs. And when you think culturally, an HBCU stands for prestige. Most families send their children to HBCUs to become doctors and lawyers, engineers, not music executives. I'm sorry. It doesn't happen like that. And so there, it's like a disconnect, but it's also very performative. And then the second part of it is, what are they doing with the Black and Brown people that are already existing in those corporations? They're qualified for leadership positions, and yet they can't get beyond middle management. Why is that? Why is that? Why do we have to just say, okay, let's take this group of people, put them in internships, and then, we'll at least they've gained access into the industry, right? But what about those people who are already in it? What are you doing to support their careers? And it's also unfortunate with the data, women of color, the majority of us, like I said, can't get beyond middle management. So by the time you hit 35 to 40 and 40 plus, what we see happening is they end up having to pivot into a different industry, start their own businesses, which is what I did. I started my own companies as a way to empower myself because I couldn't get beyond middle management roles. Or they start families. And that's just unfortunately, fortunately, depending on your perspective, those are the three changes that typically happen with a woman of color in the business. It's, I know that I'm going off on a number of tangents here, but
No, you're good. You're good.
I'm trying to connect the dots because I have friends who, they go into the industry very green, and everybody wants to be the head of something, the CEO or the owner or, the head of the label that they've always dreamed of heading. And then when they say, look at the faces of these people who are in those positions, do you notice something? They do not look like you.
Not at all.
So let's be realistic. What is your exit plan? What's your exit strategy? I think it's if you're someone like me where music is all you know, this is the only thing I've ever wanted to do in my life. It's the only thing I've ever really pursued in life. I still want to find myself with value in this business beyond working or being branded by a corporation. I've had the luxury of being branded by a corporation for many 15 years. And while I was there, I established a network. I built my network. So now, when I separated myself, I'm not out here just a nobody. I've created a name for myself, so to speak. So I would offer that advice to Black and Brown women who are looking to pursue the music industry or trying to figure out like what gives, like how do I get to the next level, how to find my voice. I did it in incremental steps. I didn't know that I was like everybody else, but when I started to see the writings on the wall, I realized, okay, I need to do something for myself that's going to solidify my presence in this space that I love.
And I like how you ended on saying that it's something that you love and it's something that you're passionate about, because I noticed that you spoke about a lot of your friends and people that you might have known that when they went into the industry and they found out that there were persons at the top that did not look like them, they diverted into another industry or they started a family, making significance of them actually giving up and saying that, hey, it's a lot of work. And I was talking to someone yesterday when I said that, when you said about actually going into these corporate spaces or these branded spaces, and actually taking those moments to network and connect with others, because it's so important to build your personal brand and your personal legacy as well.
Definitely.
In this era of inclusiveness, we're striving to be more equitable and supportive in the music industry for future generations to actually follow this model. Now, I want to encourage our listeners to actively participate in creating and sustaining safe spaces for women of color, Black people, persons that look like us in the music industry. If you know someone who is just starting out of, or if they've been in the industry for a number of years and they're actually just staying at the same level, connect with them. Try and create more spaces like this where we can divulge and give information to help the next person or actually help the next future generation. Now, as we're closing, Janisa, I would like you to touch a little bit more on your book and how we can access it and how we can actually access you. So,
Okay.
for our listening audience that would like to get in touch with you or gain from the knowledge of your book as well.
Sure. So the book is called Getting the Bag: Rights and Royalties Management in Today's Modern Music Economy. I wrote it specifically for the Black and Brown community, again, to empower them to take ownership of their creativity. It really delves into some of the itty-gritty details about copyright and royalty administration, which means, optimizing your works for licensing opportunities and how to actually get paid create for your music, to get paid for your creations, right? This is very, I would say it's dense material, so I wouldn't go into it thinking, oh, it's gonna, it's not a lot of fluff in there. It's very much straight to the, guidelines, how to do, your copyright registrations, how to interpret your royalty statements, how to go about reaching out to collection societies to get your royalties, the importance of emerging technology and how to be a part of that as a way for an additional revenue stream, and the importance of diversity in the technology so that our voices are heard in the process of this new era of AI. I wanted to sp speak to that real quickly if I can.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
So artificial intelligence is a disruptive technology. I think everybody pretty much knows that at this point. For the most part, we've only been using it for a year or two on like on a global scale. We've been using it in different situations, but it's been more popularized and it's advanced in the last couple of years. So AI is about to displace a lot of people in their roles around the world in their jobs, right? We're seeing mass layoffs. We're seeing people being their roles being redundant by artificial intelligence. So how do you stay, how are you able to stay competitive in this new society that we're entering into? I think it's so important to establish a brand for yourself, to discover what it is about you that makes you unique from others. And it might take some time to figure that part out. But I would begin with the thing that sets your soul on fire. What do you actually enjoy doing? Because if you enjoy something, you'll stay consistent with it, regardless of if you're getting paid to do it or not. And that becomes your brand. Once you know what your brand is, you can start to market yourself and your expertise in that lane. For me, it was music publishing, music technology, and activism. Sorry. I was gonna say Activision, and I was like, wait, that's a company.
You're okay.
activism.
Yeah.
And I think once you find that niche, then what will happen, what will start to happen, and this is for your audience to get a little bit more ahead of the curve. You can actually train AI on your signature, on your brand. And that way, if other people want to pay you for it, they'll just license it from you instead of you having to do the work yourself. But you can still get paid from your likeness being used. We're seeing it done in the music, on the music side a lot. I'm building technology called Harmony that essentially helps people to start their own businesses and their own brands as a way to generate an income. Because we are going to see again just a lot of people displaced by AI. So again, establish a unique brand for yourself and think about ways that you can license that brand. All right. Now, in terms of where you can find me on IG, my handle is Pub Royalty Queen Publishing, short for publishing, Pub Royalty Queen. I have a number of companies. They're all listed in my link in bio. If you want to see more, things that I've done in the past, the research study, my nonprofit organization, it'll all be a link in bio on IG. You can also find me on freshandsassy.com. You can find me on pubroyaltyqueen.com, encoremusic.tech, harmony.xyz, and harmony is spelled without the vowels. And if you want to connect with me on LinkedIn, just type in Janisha Jones, and I'm pretty responsive on there. So I want to thank you, Lindira, for the opportunity again to have a high level conversation, and Looking forward to seeing how we can continue to build.
Yes, most definitely. And I am also very, very happy to have you as well here. And please do not be a stranger at all.
I
Okay.
will. Yes. Thank you so much.
Yes, you're welcome. And you take care now.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.